I'm joined by David Benson, who's set himself the daunting challenge of recreating Kenneth Williams on stage. David's one-man show is called Think No Evil Of Us, My Life with Kenneth Williams, and it's currently to be seen at the Birmingham Repertory Theatre before a nationwide tour. David, good morning.
Good morning, yes, thank you. May I say what a pleasure it is for you to have me on your show, Mr. Parkinson.
Oh, my word, I remember that so many times. Seven times, I think, I had him on the television show. He started off, he recalled in his diaries, which you've read, of course.
Of course, yes.
I think I was a North Country git when he first met me.
It was git or nit.
One of the other. It rhymed, anyway, with the word like. And then about 10 years later, he was rather more pleasant about me, strangely.
Well, I think he respected you as a professional, you know. But,
I think we had that much in common, yes.
Yeah, I think at first he thought, you know, these amateurs, you know, hasn't got an equity card, you know. Oh, no. You know, journalists. He didn't like journalists very much, or critics, indeed.
No, he didn't, indeed not.
But that interview you did with him, which everybody knows now, it was fantastic for me for my show when I was doing my research, because you showed that on telly just about the time I was doing my research. Yes. And it showed him really being himself, letting go and going off on one of his rants, which of course you don't get to see in his Carry On films, where he's very studied and he's doing his usual bit. But there he was, really letting rip and actually making a bit of a fool of himself and getting himself in deep water.
Yes, he could do that, couldn't he? He was a terrible ranter when he got going. He was rather like a sort of jazz musician on a riff, you know, away he went, and God knows where he was going to finish. He didn't know at all.
That's right.
But that made him exciting too, to interview him from that point of view.
That's right, but it was very interesting because he went on there, he really made a fool of himself. And then you notice that he rescued himself with a little anecdote, a little laugh that suddenly absolved him from any... You forgave him immediately. Mm. I think that was very revealing.
Even he had this great armoury, didn't he, as a raconteur? Mm. He had the voices to get him out of trouble to start with.
That's right,
he had this wonderful storehouse of magnificent stories.
I think he was the great raconteur of his age, really.
He was God's gift to the talk show, which is the same thing.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Tell me about the title of the show, Think No Evil Of Us, My Life with Kenneth Williams.
Right, well, when you read the letters which were published a couple of years ago, you occasionally come upon one that says, well, he's writing to a friend, and he'll say, you never write to me, you don't give me enough detail, I want the dirt, yes, give me the dirt, and, you know, you abuse me, I'm supposed to be your friend, I'm very insecure, I need to be looked after, you know, you need to write to me often, and then he would say, think no evil of us, yours, Kenneth. And I thought that was wonderful. Mm. Think no evil of us. I don't know where he got it from, but it stuck in my mind. Mm. And I thought it was very good because, you see, what I'm trying to do is show him as he was, show him warts and all, or ulcers and all, if you like, and show that he was redeemable in the end, and that, like all of us, and that he wasn't evil, although he could appear to be very vicious and cruel to people. But he was actually just a frail human being like all of us, trying to make his way through the world.
In the end, of course, sadly, he was a rather forlorn figure, wasn't he?
He was, terribly. Mm. I mean, I think even his very close friends were shocked when they read the diary. Some of them have got in touch with me since I've been doing the show, and have indeed become friends of mine, and they told me that they were horrified. They had no idea that he would go home and write these appalling confessions of these feelings of disgust he'd had when he was on Just a Minute or something. Mm. And we, of course, were roaring with laughter, weren't we, when we heard him going, you know, doing his great outbursts, when he'd say, I've come all the way from Great Portland Street. I've never been treated with any respect on this show. And it sounds funny, but in fact, it was the real him. Mm. And that he was really revealing a side of himself, that this need to be acknowledged and to be loved. You know, and he was never able to really do that.
In the play, too, you interweave your own autobiographical...
That's right.
Some of your autobiographical...
That's right,
With, would I be right in saying that what you had in common was a very... What's the word? A curious relationship with your mother.
Mm. I mean... Yes, that's right. Well, she was... I mean, she might be listening to this. And,
this is your mum, I'm talking.
Yes, my mother, yes. I did have a strange relationship with her because she was not well, basically. Yes. I mean, she was She was ill, you know, and so there was a lot of... it was a very strange childhood, and it was one that I kept away from my friends at school. I didn't ever have any friends home. I used to live in this fantasy world, locked into my bedroom, imagining that I was other people, principally funny people who I saw on television. All my heroes I would recreate, and I would be Eric Morecambe, and I would be the entire cast of Dad's Army. I thought I was Sergeant Wilson for a long time. Going, what an awfully pretty uniform. For me, lovely, they're charming, you know, and I would be the entire cast, and loads of people I used to see on your show. I mean, you interviewed all my great heroes, Frankie Howard, Kenneth, of course. You did interviews with Morecambe Wise, were hilarious, and Barry Humphries, of course, still is one of my great heroes. I think he's the great genius of one-man performance, and those are the people that kind of saved me in a way, and I learnt at school to use humour as it's almost a cliche that people who become comedians or comic actors begin by drawing people towards them by making them laugh. Right. And I did discover at school that if you can make people laugh, they will eventually stop hitting you.
Which is what Kenneth did too, of course.
Of course.
But again, had this strange relationship with his mother, didn't he?
Well, he did. A lot of people say to me, is that the link between you and Kenneth? Yes. Is it you and your mother? And it's not really. No. I mean, people. I leave them to make their own links, really. I just wanted to talk about my own experience, and because of the link I had with him, which is that when in 1975, when I was 13, I wrote this story for the Jack and Ori story writing competition, you see. They had this competition every year, and you were invited to send something in. Now, at the time, I was obsessed, when I was 13, with Spike Milligan and The Goon Show. And I lived in this world of the Goon Shows, and I actually wrote this story very much in Milligan's style. I thought if I could write something as funny as the Goon Show, I thought it would somehow free me from all my problems. So I wrote this thing and sent it in to the BBC, and I had this letter from the producer, Daphne Jones, and she said, congratulations, your story has been selected and will be read on Wednesday the 10th of December 1975 by Kenneth Williams. You see, and I was mortified.
Why?
Because, well, you see, first of all, I wanted Milligan to do it, and I thought maybe by some chance they might get Spike Milligan to be on the programme, or even Harry Secombe would have been fine. And Kenneth Williams, he was so camp, you see. He was the most, probably the campest comedian in Britain, and to have that at school, I mean, I knew what was going to happen, and I was right. The next day at school, it was all these pubescent Kenneth Williamses coming up to me and going, oh, ducky, and flapping their hands in my face. I'm like, oh, no, I was mortified.
I talked to David Benson about his one-man performance, his one-man stage production of Think No Evil Of Us, My Life with Kenneth Williams. We'll take a break and talk some more to David in just a moment. This is Dawn Upshaw and a Rodgers and Hart song. Nice song, though. Right, it's a Rodgers and Hart song, bound to be a good song. Nice version, though, by Dawn Upshaw. From a CD.
I've never heard that one.
I mean, she's a classical singer, isn't she, Dawn Upshaw? Yes, I'm looking toward my producer Flick, who knows all these things.
She's looking at the CD cover.
Crossover artist, she is. But it's a lovely voice, and she's done this CD called Dawn Upshaw Sings Rodgers and Hart. Let's talk more about Kenneth Williams. Did you like him at the end of all your research? What were your feelings about him?
Well, I felt desperately sorry for him. I mean, there were some things that I could understand, his need for solitude and some of his insecurities I could understand, but it was very hard to really figure out why he was so unhappy and why he was never able to resolve these problems that he had. When you read those diaries that were published, it's very interesting. There's very little in the way of character development throughout them, from 1947, when they start, to 1988. And he talks in 1947, he says, I'm a suicidalist, I've just realised. And he's complaining about how unhappy he is. And at the end, it's exactly the same. He has no great moment of realisation. And you wish somehow that he could have just come to terms with his, whatever it was, that he was so unhappy about his sexuality or whatever it was.
Yes, I'm going to ask you that. Did you ever come reach a conclusion? Was it his sexuality?
I think it must have been. I can't think what else it could have been. Yes. Because he was so tortured by that.
Yes, he was.
And at the same time, he had this great need to display it. You know, he was so camp and so outrageous, and if he was in a restaurant, the waiters would be flirting with people and navvies. He loved his navvies, you know. Oh, yes, lovely hole. Oh, yes, I love your hole. You're nice and deep, nice big deep hole, yes. You know, all this. You know, rather like carry-on sort of dialogue. And He was displaying it all the time. He never pretended to be heterosexual.
No, no, not at all.
And yet he was tortured by this sexuality. He hated it.
That's right.
Like, he hated everything he loved. You know, his mother, he hated her and he loved her. And
yes.
He hated his job and he loved it. And it was this complete dichotomy.
When he died, of course, there was an open verdict.
That's right.
Recorded. But you are of the opinion that, in fact, he committed suicide.
Yes, I am. I think when you read... The coroner didn't have access to the diaries, but I think when you read them, I don't think there's very much doubt that... I mean, even if you don't believe he did commit suicide, he certainly talks about it all the way through his book. It was certainly very much on his mind.
Yes.
And I know there are some fans of his who don't want to believe that he committed suicide, but certainly a lot of his close friends who've spoken to me really don't have any doubts at all. The only person who really doesn't believe is that I spoke to is his agent, who came up to see the show, a lovely man called Michael Anderson, and he gave the typical agent's response to this question, did he commit suicide? And he said, well, I don't think he did, you know, because he was doing a job for me the next week. he was recording a voiceover. He was very professional, you know. And I'm saying, yes, well, maybe. I'm not sure about that.
He had a capacity for all his whimsicality.
Yeah.
And his cruelness at times, and his carelessness. He had a capacity for people who did know him, loved him, didn't they? I mean, one or two very close, Maggie Smith.
Yes,
and,
that's right.
And Barbara Windsor. And
that's right,
like
yes, they adored him.
Adored him very much indeed.
Mm. Yes, yeah.
So, we're talking here then basically about a... I mean, what sort of a... How do you categorise him as a performer, David? I mean, when you've done all the research on him, you've looked at his... Had he just got a talent to amuse, or was it?
Well, I think you could say, in Quentin Crisp's word, he was in the profession of being. He really was himself. His greatest part that he played was Kenneth Williams.
Mm.
And he had great talent. Funnily enough, a woman came to see the show at the Birmingham Rep the other night, where I'm still performing until the 11th of January, incidentally. And
I'll be taken care of in a more gracious, graceful manner later.
Oh, life's too short, Mr. Parkinson. No, but this woman came up to me, and she said she'd known him in 1950 at Swansea Rep. When he was a very young actor, working with Rachel Roberts, amongst others, and Burton, in fact. He understudied Burton in The Seagull. And she said he was a wonderful actor, very, very talented. He was fantastic as the Dauphin in St. Joan.
Mm.
And she said that she went for the rest of her life looking at him in these Carry On films and just... despairing, really, because he wasted his talent.
I think that's part of his self-loathing, in a sense. I mean, often he would go on about, you know, acting, you know, what a good actor he was.
Yes.
The fact of the matter was, of course, the public only knew him because of being a clown in the Carry On movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that basically was it.
Yeah.
I think there was that element in him, actually, that said perhaps you didn't sort of... I think he rationalised it in a way that he thought he'd been dealt a bad hand. In fact, I don't think he was. He chose a course in his life, as we all do.
I think he chose a rather easy course in some ways.
Yes.
But in many ways, I mean, I'm sure we're all glad he did, because he was so fantastically entertaining.
Absolutely.
And last night, I must tell you something that happened last night. At the end of my show, I do a little talk, and a few words, and I say, you know, I wish he hadn't done it. I wish he hadn't gone away, because, you know, I still miss him. And I said, last night, don't you? And a whole audience just murmured, yes.
Yeah.
And it actually blew me away. And I was quite choked for a moment, and I had to then take a breath and carry on. But I suddenly realised that people really loved him and missed him, and that's why they come to see the show, because they want to see him.
David, I've enjoyed very much indeed talking to you. I'm being reminded
it's
of...
an honour.
being reminded of old Kenneth.
Yeah.
You're on, as you said, at the Birmingham Repertory Theatre until the 11th.
That's right.
And then you do a nationwide tour, which really is a nationwide tour.
Well, it's a national stagger around the entire country, mainly one-nighters, but probably coming to a town near you, listeners. Keep your eyes open. What's it called again? What's it called?
It's called your show. It's called Think No Evil of Us.
That's it. Think No Evil of Us. My life with Kenneth Williams. David Benson.
That's your name.
Thank you, Mr. Parkinson.
Thank you, Mr. Benson.
Yes.
This is Mel Torme.